desperate and hungry and got nothing to lose. Yeah, I'm alone.
I've been chased, I've been bit.
Yeah, I'm a lone wolf.
They like to shoot me, but they miss.
Yeah, I'm a lone wolf. And I ain't never been trapped.
I've been running since I was three.
Born in Louisiana swamp, moved with the pack to Tennessee. Raised by black and white dogs to some country, some rock and roll. They said, now boy, you're gonna have to quit your howling. By the moon, laying up all day on the porch, playing guitar tune. Yeah, I'm a lone wolf,
and I no longer run with the pack.
Yeah, I'm a lone wolf,
I don't ever look back.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby, I'm a lone wolf. Hey, right here on the 17th of July, 2017, and we're ready for another show, but don't forget our address, P.O. Box 1687, San Jacinto, California, 92583. Address it to Terrible Tommy. No, just Tom Metzger. That'll do. Yeah, I'm going to read to you today a little bit from the NS Bulletin for California, 1972. I have a few of these old bulletins around. I know there's probably none around left anymore, but here we go. National Socialists hit the peace march on November 18th. Forever trying to end the war in Vietnam with treasonous collaboration, 344 Reds were confronted by 28 stormtroopers determined to provide overdue justice. Heavy police guard prevented any incidents. Police pulled the party truck and accompanying vehicle to the side of the road, and with professional demeanor and politeness, searched everyone for weapons. Following this formality, the truck pulled in front of the masked Reds with the expected result of shock and surprise. The party received massive publicity from this event, and naturally the demonstration by the Reds accomplished nothing in the way of putting to stop the Vietnam tragedy. Marshall Wright loses court battle November 27th because Marshall Wright bought a lunch from the money given to him by citizens for copies of the White Power newspaper. It was determined that at the end of the 7-day-long jury trial that he therefore was guilty of operating a business without a license, which is required by the El Monte, California City Ordinance. The judge issued a fine of $25 and 1 year's unsupervised probation. The party attorney, James White, gave a flamboyant final statement, which apparently shocked the reactionary jury. Stormtroopers march against Jane Fonda on November the 4th. Head scum Jane Fonda and her pack of fellow scum littered downtown Los Angeles with their odious presence to demonstrate that their simple-mindedness and red sympathies in the free speech for the benefit of Jewish publicists. They weren't expecting the sight of 23 stormtroopers in opposition as the party fighters arrived in their newly acquired party 2.5-ton military truck, with Joe Tomasi driving. Appropriately decorated with large white swastikas on the doors. Although no incidents took place, the Reds were taken aback by the spectacle of the stormtrooper men presented, and as much as said in a recent article in the Jewish Red Mouthpiece, the Los Angeles Free Press, the party photographer made a movie of the occasion, which has been exhibited at recent party meetings. And I knew that photographer. Sooner or later, he came down to Southern California and came to San Diego and worked for me. He took a hell of a lot of video. Sam Napier was his name. He'd been a National Socialist Party member for years. When we had a riot in Oceanside, California, against the Reds, Sam Napier stood right in the middle of the street with rocks and bottles flying over his head from the Reds and so forth, and with a construction helmet on, and he braved the situation. Sam was in his at least late 60s at that time. He accompanied us everywhere we went and did a good job of videotaping. Incidentally, he used to ride a motorcycle even into his later years, and he had a sword cane strapped to the side of his motorcycle. Sam used to go into the streets of San Diego, California, right into where the blacks were hanging out, and stood there and handed out National Socialist literature without fear or trouble. He never really had a problem. The one problem is he had a tremendous amount of priceless videotape of National Socialist activities. And he died. When he died, unfortunately, we didn't get to his living space or apartment in time, and the cops got in there, and also they got all the video, all the film, and I think it went right to the ADL, I never did forget that. That was a problem, and that's why when you have things and pictures and so forth that belong to the overall movement, you should make sure that they don't fall into the wrong hands, because we lost the entire supply of film that Sam Napier had taken over the years, even stuff of George Lincoln Rockwell. Next, a new address for the San Diego unit. Ray Wilson, a local unit leader in San Diego, would like all interested persons to contact him by writing the new unit address in San Diego. I knew Wilson, too. Next, Mexican attempts to firebomb our headquarters, January 13. After hearing a disturbance outside the building at about 11 p.m. Saturday night, Paul Mooney and Bruce Matthews went to see what the commotion was all about. They discovered that what appeared to be a Chicano version of the Bay of Pigs invasion, and it failed just as miserably. It is supposed party members were expected to be terrified by flying eggs, which they bravely threw from speeding cars. The more stupid ones pulled up in front of the building and threw a firebomb, which was ineffectual as usual, at which time Stormtrooper Mooney chambered a round in his pistol and fired at the vehicle. The first round misfired, which allowed the Chicano idiot time to maneuver around the car parked in front of him. Mooney chambered a second round and fired it at this time hot lead put a little motivation into the rear end of the fleeing blue Camaro and its frightened Mexicans. Next, Commander Cale to visit L.A. March 31, 1973. A special notice will be sent to all official supporters and party members concerning the Commander Cale's March visit. A massive NS meeting will take place along with speeches from the top party leadership. There will, in addition, be a showing of the film classic Triumph of the Will. Party mailing list computerized. As you can see by the address labels, our 2000 name LA mailing list has been computerized. The machines we have at our disposal are worth $1.5 million. The cost to us is minimal. This advance will save countless hours of manpower. I know some other people that use that equipment too, some Christian Identity people. James K. Warner had use of that machinery too. L.A. National Socialists clash with the ADL, January 20, 1973. On Saturday, January 20, an army truck packed with 25 uniformed stormtroopers headed towards Los Angeles to confront 1,300 communists, queers, and other degenerate elements of the democratic society with the force and violence of revolutionary National Socialist idealism. As the truck loaded with troopers entered L.A.'s city limits, a carload of police began their usual tailing of the truck. Closer and closer, the truck entered what is now enemy territory for National Socialists. More and more long-haired creeps and nigger contraband could be seen. Suddenly, we were approaching the Pershing Square when one red flag could be seen, then another and another. The whole place was crawling with swine in all sizes and shapes. As the stormtrooper men neared the Reds, one could feel the fear they felt towards the National Socialists. As their march began, the troopers yelled and chanted NS slogans. The air horn on the truck blared out and the tension mounted. But with all the egging on by the stormtroopers, the thousands of creeps refused to fight, so the party battle wagon moved on to L.A. City Hall, where the Reds were to hold a rally. As the National Socialists took to the streets, 15 members of the Raggedy Jewish Defense League followed, chanting and yelling vulgarities commonly attributed to Jewish culture. When the National Socialists neared the rear of the city hall, the Jews threw a bottle at the marching stormtroopers, who instantly charged the Jews. A tremendous fist fight broke out. Every Jew landed on the ground and was severely beaten. Jew blood flowing freely into the grass and the pavement, depending on where a particular kike fell. NS Pickett's sticks crashed down with thunderous blows onto the Jew's skulls, opening new blood-soaked wounds. Once on the ground, the JDLers were unmercifully kicked and poked with boots and sticks until many Jews were left unconscious. At any chance, Jews ran for police safety. Even the JDL leader, Irv Rubin, ran after a trooper, smashed him alongside the schnozzola with a picket stick. He wasn't seen till after a large police force arrived. Even as police arrived en masse, the troopers could still be seen dragging Jews by the feet, all the while being kicked and clubbed. Eventually, the last creepy kike got away. A few Jews were sent to the hospital with multiple head wounds and bruises. That sounds like the riot I was in at the Los Angeles train station when I and five other people were attacked by the JDL that had followed us there from the courts building. And we did the same thing. We beat them into a pulp. Irv Rubin ran off and left his people bleeding. No storm troop personnel received any injury, but one trooper, Stormtrooper Philip Fogarty, was arrested for overreacting when defending himself against the JDLers. I knew Phil Fogarty very, very well, and Phil Fogarty was a Catholic, and he started an organization of Catholic National Socialists. Apparently, the boys complained that he was wiping Jews out left and right. Fogarty faces charges of assault with a deadly weapon. The Jews will never learn that you don't mess with National Socialists unless you want to get wiped out. I believe that case was dropped against Phil Fogarty. They had I remember going to a commemoration for Adolf Hitler at a Catholic church, and they said, and all these National Socialists went to the church, and they had a mass for Adolf Hitler right downtown L.A. JDL plans massive demonstration against L.A. headquarters in reaction to the severe beating the JDL received from the stormtroop section of the NSWPP on January 20th. They have announced a massive Jew demonstration similar to that of January 30th, 1972. This was next Schmuckel's demonstration is to take place on March 4th, 1973, a Sunday at 12 noon. At this particular demonstration, the JDL has announced plans to come with guns. So if the kikes want to have any gunplay, they've come to the right place. If they make one wrong move, we'll mow them down, like they did in Greensboro. Every National Socialist is asked to mobilize and be at the headquarters of the National Socialist White People's Party at 44375 North Peck Road, El Monte, California, no later than 8:30 a.m., Sunday morning, March 4th. Be prepared for one hell of a fight. Call 213-442-1046 for further details. Extra special security precautions are being developed for the event. The fight has come. Wage war with us against the common enemy, the Jew. On the picture, or on the front of this pamphlet, there's a picture of this deuce and a half military truck that the National Socialists had bought and painted it up with their insignias and so forth, and they used that all the time. I've seen that truck several times, and they used to drive it all over Southern California. They drove it up to Frisco too. Probably didn't get too good a gas mileage. Anyhow, that's a sample of the Western States Bulletin for the membership of the NSWPP. Incidentally, I was speaking about Sam Napier, the National Socialist Party photographer, who was involved with the National Socialists in Los Angeles. But as that particular group began to come apart later on, he moved to San Diego and joined up with my clan, the Clan California. And when he died, we had several men and women who went to the graveyard, and our men played taps on the bugle and the whole bit. And his family was on the other side, a little bit away. He was estranged from his wife and the family. They were Seventh-day Adventists. They didn't want anything to do with us, and we didn't want anything to do with them. And we told the funeral home director that was there that we were going to put Sam's National Socialist uniform and his Klan uniform in the coffin with Sam. And the funeral home director said, "You can't do that." And we said, "Watch us." And we went up to the coffin, and we opened the coffin and put the uniforms in on Sam's chest and closed it back up again. Nobody gave us any more trouble about that. So anyhow, that he's buried out in southwest San Diego. His plot is recorded in our website of where he's at. And if people want to go out there sometime and pay their respects, they can find him. So anyhow, that's that. Well, retired New York Police Department Commissioner Bill Bratton said Sunday that there's no quick fix for Chicago's horrific murder rate, and handed out blame to just about everyone involved in policing in the Windy City. Quote, "Chicago has a number of special sets of circumstances," unquote. Yeah, Negroes, Bratton told interviewer John Casamatis on the Cats Roundtable radio show. "It's a department thing that has really cut back on its assertive policing, that means bumping and cracking skulls. Bratton said the black communities, and there is no such thing, as long-standing distrust of officers is both undesirable and problematic." Well, quote, "It's a department that has had a long, troubling history with its minority community, Negro community, that is. And the black KKK just gives them all kinds of shit, particularly its black community," he said. Quote, "I think it's clearly understood that the Chicago Police Department has had more than its share of problem issues over the years. Corruption, brutality, lack of training. But I'll never admit it's niggers. It's everything else. At least 368 people have been murdered in Chicago this year alone through Friday night. By comparison, New York City, with three times the population of Chicago, had 135 murders through July 9th, with moral cratering in the Chicago PD on every murder, Bratton said cops are leaving the job and making it harder for any kind of stability. Quote, they lost quite a few officers through attrition over the years. There's no quick fix for Chicago. Cops are not that stupid if they're going to stick around. They don't want to stick around and get killed. Quote, the solutions are there, but it's going to take a while to work them out. Figure out how the black KKK is doing all this shit. They never want to. The answers are simple. And it's not going to be inexpensive. Always costs lots of money to handle these Negroes. And it's going to take a change in culture. Yeah, what do you mean about that? It is going to take a change possibly in the political situation out there. Yeah. You might need to go to a fascist form of government in Chicago. Here's a curious situation. Peter W. Smith, a Republican political activist and financier from Chicago, who mounted an effort to obtain former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's emails from Russian hackers, died on May 14th after asphyxiating himself in a hotel room in Rochester, Minnesota. According to local authorities, he was 81 years old. When anybody in a somewhat power position dies a bit strangely, my antenna goes up. Smith's body was found by a hotel clerk in the Aspen Suites Hotel, located across the street from the Mayo Clinic, according to Rochester Police Department report. An associate of Smith said he had recently visited the clinic. A representative for the facility wouldn't confirm if Smith was a patient. Well, he could have been despondent. He could have been sick. He could have done it, but maybe not. Who knows? Well, 30 people were shot and 3 fatally in 18 hours in Chicago. Is that some kind of a record? I don't know. Could be. They still just can't figure out what's causing it. The black KKK strikes again. 2016, Chicago's worst year yet. 780 murders, making it the deadliest year in the city in nearly 2 decades. Wow. Wowee. I don't know whether you use these Google Alerts, but you can put any subject you want in there under one name, you know, like black or Negro or Jew or whatever. And it'll give you every story that comes up on that every day. But it's interesting that you can have Mexican, you can have mestizo, you can have Asian, you can have black, and it'll bring them up, all the crimes committed. But under Jew crime, there's never any of that stuff comes up. No Jew crimes come up. The only one that came up today was the French President Macron joins Netanyahu in a justice call for the murdered Jewish pensioner, Sarah something, Halliman. So they will not put any Jew crime on the Jew crime list. That's Google. Then they wonder why that makes people suspicious of the Jews. I wonder why. Man charged with a hate crime after a woman says the guy tried to pull off her headscarf, her hijab, the Muslim covering. That's a hate crime? Wow. Must be 15 stories on that subject on the web. The guy just tried to pull off her hijab. Well, they got a Minneapolis, Minnesota hate crime hotline now. Becomes a lightning rod. Wow. And they got them in, of course, most of the major cities now. You think there's going to be any less hate crimes? Alleged hate crimes? There's going to be more love crimes now. You know, hanging one of these little nooses made out of cord is a hate crime now. over in Montgomery County in Maryland. Two teens, kids, face hate crime charges after surveillance caught them placing a noose at the Crofton Middle School. Well, let's see what the Odinists thought of the Christian situation back in the 1984. This was put out by the Odinists from Crystal River, Florida. That was Elsie, and I forget her last name, I'm sorry. Her husband had been in the SS in World War II, and they were Danish or Swedes, I forget which. Sorry, Elsie. I met you many times, but my memory is getting a little dim lately. Church and Capital, this is called. As he was entering Jerusalem, preparing to announce his kingdom, Jesus came riding in on an ass, somewhat uncomfortable, but innocently disarming, the first clerical subterfuge. Ever since then, the church has preached poverty, but has it practiced poverty? Let's take a look at the intricate maze of clerical entanglements in the world of finance. Practically right from the start, the Christian leaders rob pagan temples of their treasures. The institutional church's efforts at converting, read that, believe or be killed. Our forefathers were also characterized by unheard of robbery as well as murder. All the death verdicts of the Augsburg bishopric, previously to be so-called Peace of Augsburg in 1555, ended with the formula, quote, all our property shall go to the treasury of this princely majesty, the Right Reverend Father Marquard, Bishop of Augsburg and Prior of Bamberg. One of the most tragic examples of clerical financial cunning, and one of the best ways they would make fools out of our ancestors, occurring to the deathbed. Before a priest would perform the sacrament of extreme unction, he would graphically depict all the horrible things that will befall the hapless peasant because of his unatoned sins. But lucky for the poor old man, the priest would promise to say many masses for him, providing, of course, that he be endowed with some earthly remembrance. Oh, an acre or so will do. The uneducated peasant, frightened at the prospect of shoveling coal into the bottomless furnace while being taunted by weird beings, was also only too glad to put his ex on a sheet of paper promising the priest everything, even his wife's share of the property. Over a period of years, the church practically became the owner of half of Europe. In Europe today, the churches are supported in various ways by governments, particularly in the West. Outright grants, clerical welfare funding, and other taxes levied upon the church with billions of dollars. With so much, what does the church do? Give it to the poor? No. It invests in all sorts of enterprises regardless of the moral character of the firm. A good example is the Italian clothing company Jesus Jeans. This business, owned by the Vatican, produces sexy jeans and similar items. Its advertising is highly erotic, yet the same religion that tells its members to be pure in heart sees nothing wrong in selling impure of heart wares to the public. The financial portfolio of the Roman Catholic Church makes Rockefellers look like a ragged pauper. The following list is but a small sample. A goodly share of U.S. Steel, which pretty much no more, Sharon Steel, Bethlehem Steel, General Motors, Prudential Life, McDonnell Douglas Aviation. The Jesuits own 51% of the Bank of America. Of course, the Vatican also has controlling interest in many European companies as well. It virtually monopolizes the banking world in Italy. It has large shares of Fiat, the automobile manufacturer, Alitalia and 90% of the Italian steel industry. In West Germany, the Catholic Church is the insurance magnate. Three large companies, plus BASF, Siemens, and Haskell, Hamburg Electric Power, and in the Protestant North, no less, and many other large companies. While the church constantly pleads in the well-to-do countries that their citizens should help the poor, unfortunate people of the underdeveloped nations, the financial arm of the church is the actual owner of some of the worst violators of human dignity in the third world. The zinc pits of Bolivia are just one example. To be sure, the church does spend some of its take for good causes, but when one considers the astounding wealth of the church and compares it to the philosophical message, sell what you have and give to the poor, and come follow me, the realization of the hypocritical attitude of the Vatican emerges with full force. Selected individuals within the church will argue that the money is needed to finance its work. This may be so, but it doesn't jibe with the church's own teaching. Quote, lay not upon yourselves treasures upon the earth, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be. Well, Bank of America. It is obvious that the church fathers do not follow their own teachings. After 2,000 years of Christianity, the hypocrisy is as bad as it was when St. Matthew said about the scribes and Pharisees that they bind heavy burdens and grievous to their born and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye shall clean the outside of the cup and the platter, but within they are full of extortion and excess. That's what Elsie and the Odinists thought of the Catholic Church back in 1984. And I think I occur to that probably more than she does. I'm reading from Liberty Bell magazine now, one of the best magazines for the race ever printed. Letters to the Editor, 1984. Farewell to a doomed nation is pitiful. I can understand people living in America and Europe not comprehending the nigger problem. But the people of South Africa, after Rhodesia, it is amazing how little say the population has in important matters. Civilization seems to come from the top. When the top spots are captured by the Jews and the media, the nerves of the boobs are controlled by them. The body politic seems to lapse into insanity and death. It is just amazing that people will go on with business as usual till they are wiped out. But that was the case in Rhodesia and has been the case here and in South Africa. One thing I'd like to comment on, the elections after the massive fraud we have seen in El Salvador and the U.S. primaries, no one can put any faith into election promises made by a Jew government. Nobody knows what the real count was in the recent South African elections, or how many whites really voted for their own suicide under Jewish mind control. One thing is sure, if the whites of South Africa go down to exile and slavery without revolt, then the omen for America is ghastly. As Professor Oliver puts it, this will show that we are really lost the will to live and deserve to perish. The liberals really have a death wish. Let us hope they can fulfill it without taking the rest of us down. Let us help them to their desired demise. Constant slobbering over D-Day 40 years ago, the media are full of D-Day stories, usually always told by Jewish combat veterans. Now there are a few of these, but nonetheless near the proportions of the population, nowhere near. The news stories are bound to cover this over. The Jews' actor president was over in France mouthing platitudes about freedom, as the Jew conquest of Europe is referred to, and making very real plans for the Middle East war and plotting to squeeze more interest payments out of the bankrupts. 40 years have passed, and the hate against Hitler is still kept unabated. That shows whom the Jews fear above all else, and whose ideas are the correct ones for the future, if our world is to have a future. Interestingly, the Japanese emperor, the contemporary and ally of Hitler, still rules Japan and is allowed to do so without criticism, while Hitler is an entirely different story. For nearly 40 years, we have been forced to live with the World War II settlement and total Jewish rule. Now that it has taken its toll and the world is collapsing into bankruptcy and chaos, there are numerous signs that the World War II agreements are about to collapse, as the U.S. has been too determined to survive as a world power. In the years to come, our race will have to develop strong leaders to survive. It is our part of making sure that they are not ignorant of the Jew and are not manipulated as previous rulers have been. The list of rulers who played along with the Jews until it was too late is pitiful. All the Jews have is knowledge and organization. If our race can develop a tenth of what the Jews have, our victory is assured. Without it, we will remain helpless. And that's the end of that letter. It was a letter from an Argentinian, or a man who had moved to Argentina. Dear Mr. Dietz, I left the USA because I could not stand living in a colony of world Jewry. I chose to live in Argentina because I thought the Jews did not have much power in that country. This was a great error. In the U.S., where the printed word belongs almost exclusively to the Jews, I was made to believe that the Argentinians were anti-Semites and the Jews were persecuted. Did not take a long time to realize that this was absolutely untrue. The Jews have here as much power and influence as they have anywhere. The Argentinian sheep are as stupid and submissive as the sheep anywhere else. To give you a sample of the poison the Jews are giving us here, I'm sending you a magazine whose cover, the first and most important title, is "Ashkenazi Jews Are Descendants of the Aryan Empire," unquote. The article was inspired by Arthur Koestler's book, The 13th Tribe. I hope to possess and have read this book. The Jew Arthur Koestler does not pretend such an observation, but since his book is not available here, it can be used for any purpose. The readers of the magazine will not start an investigation to find out the truth. The new democratic government makes it easier for the Jews to advance towards total enslavement of this nation. I just renewed my subscription. Yeah, I wish they were still publishing. There's nothing like Liberty Bell today. That was the best stuff printed. No one should be deceived by the vociferous hostility one still sees quoted silly diatribes by Bolshevik agitators in the 20s, advertising their humanitarian desire to strangle the people with the guts of the last preacher. And we hear endless repeated bleats that we must destroy communism and return to the Judeo-Christian faith, although the antagonism is real enough on the lower level. where the salesmen are competing with each other for business, the vociferations are designed to make us suppose that there is a diametrically opposition and total antithesis between the cults that the Jews have provided for their goyim. We should remember that such furious hostility is only normal in monotheistic religions, which are always a blight to the nations that succumb to them. It is the essence of such religions that heresies between them, within them, must be extinguished in blood to defend the true gospel, what that may be at the time of the God who has been irrationally imagined as the creator of everything. There is no reading more dreary than the fanatical ravings of theologians determined to extirpate their rivals in the one God business. But judicious sampling of the squill is highly instructive, and everyone should read something of the endless logum machines that accompanied the Protestant Reformation. Read a little of all sides just to assure yourself there's no basic difference except in the identity of the damnable agents of the Antichrist. Here's a nice illustration to the point I wish to make. It is one of the serious woodcuts made for Martin Luther to give graphic expression to the obvious need to exterminate Catholics from the face of the earth. You will note that the most satanic people and his cardinals have not been hanged in the usual way, by which the neck of the victim is broken, thus cutting short his death agonies. They have been suspended from a beam by loops of leather about each throat, so that they will be slowly strangled while making desperate efforts to breathe, and thus will suffer as much as possible. You will note that the drawing and the verses below it are signed by Luther himself. There's a good movie about this called The Hidden Valley. Michael Caine and trying to think of the other fellow. Great movie about all these warring factions in Europe. We must not accuse Luther of undue animosity. His Catholic opponents saw with equal clarity and charity the imperative need to exterminate all Protestants to gratify some God, same God. In the upper left of the woodcut, you'll see devils capturing the black souls that escaped from the mouths of the strangled Catholics. Now the comparable pictures produced on the Catholic side show the very same devil seized the black souls that are escaping from the mouths of executed Protestants. Sensible men naturally drew the conclusion that the religious zealots of all sects were crazy and harvested by the same fiends of the orders of one of the same God for his own Judaic purposes. Sensible men also knew that it would be futile to try to abate the fury of the long wars of religion that permanently impoverished our race by the slaughter of millions, including much of our best blood, while the godly on all sides tried to please their Jesus, who was presumably watching with pleasure. The Son of God expressly commanded that he should not be deprived of the fun of watching the death agonies of all who displeased him, and all of the warring sects were united by their common desire to give him a really delightful show. How much real basis there was for the bloody piety and insane righteousness was made painfully apparent by the recent cuddling between the Pope and the Lutherans, who are being demonstrably lovey-dovey and saying to each other, "Why shouldn't we have a big merger now? After all, we're in the same racket." Lutherans and Catholics no longer find it feasible to butcher each other's customers, but you may be sure that they and the Bolsheviks will not get together for a merger until both sides have exhausted their power to make their goyims slaughter one another to demonstrate their own righteousness and the eternal truth of the revelations made by the respective Jewish messiahs. True, very true. That movie I was talking about was one of those fratricidal wars in Europe. I think it was a 20-year war. I think it was. But if you watch that film, you'll get an eyeful of how rotten and bestial Christianity and religion is. That's it. I'll be back tomorrow, and you take care.
Your generals are bandits. Wars on the Catholic King of France. You employ any mercenary you can get. Wars on the Catholic King of Spain. And the Pope plays politics, helped by 100 other princes, kings, bishops.
All for their own rotten purposes.
All sides are rotten, except for people like you. Religious fanatics who incite murder for the sake of a god they have never known. Don't you understand? There is no god!
Michael.